Hello and welcome to In Practopia, that People, Places, Things Caribbean show. My name is Kim Jean. I'm so glad you're able to join us this week. Last time I mentioned that we would have brought the Instruments of the Caribbean series starting with the Tassa drum. We weren't able to schedule an interview with Teacher Ragu, and I do apologize for that. We will, however, bring that series later in the month. All is not lost. We do have some excerpts from past guests who are using their Impractopia to develop the Caribbean in one way or another. And I thought it would be great to have a refresher on some of the powerful things that our guests have had to say about the Caribbean, about Caribbean people, and our potential. All of that is a lead up to our Women Messenger series. And it's powerful women who are influencing and using their Impractopia to develop our beloved Caribbean and Caribbean communities around the world. I know you will love that. I'm looking forward to your comments and reaction to what our past guests had to say. And we will end the show with something brand new, a preview of next week's show in their own words. So you'll actually get to hear something from next week before it happens. I also have some feedback from our Languages of the Caribbean series, and I'm very excited about that. So without further ado, let's get the show on the road.
Oh yeah, it's about that time. Pride, culture, Caribbean people.
Before we go any further, I'd like to remind you that Impractopia is available for download on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We'd also love for you to give us a rating. All of these things are good. Just to let people know how good Impractopia is, how much you're learning from it, and how much what we're trying to do in sharing the Caribbean, how that's making you more aware of what's going on in the region. And we'd also do flips. If you can imagine that, while you were on www.inpractopia.com, subscribe to receive our newsletter. I've said last week that a lot of things are going on. Soon we will be on Instagram, and also our videos will be available on YouTube. So, you know, some things are happening, and we'd love for you to be a part of that to continue the positive growth of Impractopia. So I'm still on the high from our Languages of the Caribbean series, that on Creole and Garifuna. It's been, I should say, the best 2 weeks so far in Impractopia's young life, that we've received a lot of feedback, good commentary. It's increased our Twitter followers, the number of tweets that we've gotten on any one or two podcasts that we've put out, and nice messages, people liking it, people saying, oh, this is great, it's wonderful that you're sharing. And I have a couple. The first from TJ, who wrote in on the Creole language podcast. Hi, Kim. I think that this episode is by far the episode that I have enjoyed the most. The guests were very informative, but not only that, their passion for their cause was very contagious. I especially liked hearing that Creole is a romance language. Although when I thought about saying, Mwevleo, I want you, it sounded more funny than romantic. Great show. Thank you, TJ, for that. It does, you know, some of the things in Creole, they do sound kind of funny, crude, but we love the language. And let's think about the rhythmic appeal of it as that of a romance language. And the second message is from Garifuna Pablo Blanco, who sent me this really nice message on Facebook. He said, "Hi Kim, great interview. We are currently analyzing our language history from a very critical perspective. Thank you for helping to disseminate information." And you know, Pablo, these are the kinds of things that I look forward to, knowing that people appreciate what Impractopia is trying to do, share a thing that's not usually known about the Caribbean and bringing it to light, and getting feedback from you who is doing work in something that he loves and wanting to share it with the rest of the world. So you and I are in sync on that. So again, thank you so much. And now I invite you to listen to powerful words from past guests in this last season of In Practopia, sharing their passion for their work and that of the potential of Caribbean people and the entire Caribbean in general.
So, Dr. Skinner, In Practopia is something that I really wanted to promote the Caribbean on a people, places, things level, that people in the Caribbean, people who love the Caribbean, expats and people who come back are doing good things with their lives and helping to promote the Caribbean. What are your feelings as somebody who was born in Barbados, educated outside and coming back, in terms of how you look at the quality of giving that Caribbean people can offer to the region?
Yeah, well, I think, Kim, there's so many people within the Caribbean that, you know, let's face it, we do, you know, the Caribbean has a good schooling system. We do our CXEs, our O-levels, depending on your vintage, and then you go on to further education. And there are so many people that then are trained to such a high level internationally in their fields of their own, whatever professional example we're using. And I think that, you know, the wonderful thing about Caribbean people is that we do love the Caribbean. And we so often return to the Caribbean. And I think that therefore, you know, you can add and give back to the Caribbean in essence by using that knowledge that you've gained outside and developing something that will only improve services within. Now, I think that one of the unfortunate things is that sometimes within the Caribbean, we certainly have found that Caribbean people often think about what's available locally as being, well, it couldn't possibly be good enough. And I think that Barbados Facility Centre, for example, has been a wonderful example of where people are always astounded when they realize that, you know, here we are in the Caribbean and in the area of healthcare, which we so often look and we think that everything has to be better overseas. In fact, here's the reverse, that people are coming to us for healthcare rather than the other way around. So I think that really is a big thing to stress, that up and down the Caribbean, there are various examples in various professions where, you know what, as Caribbean people, we have been abroad, we have trained, learned, and we have returned with international vision. And I think that we are able to do things better. And there's some examples that is very, very true.
I agree. And it's something that I believe. And I'm doing my bit from outside and hopefully to return. But I really do believe that. And people, a lot of Caribbean people who leave, I was saying to one of my guests a couple shows back that it's always easier to find yourself in a more developed system. But that those of us who leave and are educated on the outside have that opportunity to come back and develop where we're from, start up new businesses, put out new ideas for the region, because I really believe that the Caribbean is the next big thing for everything that's happening in the world. So I really want to be able to get that message out there.
And I think, you know, you're coming to fair that it may be easier for people to stay within the developed system that they've trained in. You know, take the field that I'm in, take medicine. Yes, I could easily have stayed in Ireland per se, and yes, you would be in a very sort of, you know, established job and an established, you know, support system. But I think that it's been far more rewarding to return to Barbados to develop something from scratch and to be able to shape it in the way that you want to shape it and, you know, develop what you want to see. I mean, I didn't do that alone. You know, I have a, you know, very, very important business co-owner of the clinic, Anna Hosford, who I think you might have emailed as well. And it's a vision of both of us. But at the end of the day, ultimately, I think that, you know, if I had remained in Ireland, would I have developed a center and started it from new? No, I wouldn't, you know. But as you say, so it may be easier to stay within the body that you know away, but it's probably more rewarding and challenging to sometimes return and develop something here that you can perhaps shape into something far better that doesn't have some of the red tape and headaches that might come with staying within a system in the US or in Ireland or wherever in healthcare.
Yeah, I agree, because we have that opportunity to do a lot of influencing, and I bow to you for that, for what you're doing in Barbados. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kim.
Dr. Cardinal Ward, so I also read that you haven't forgotten Barbados, and I think overall you haven't forgotten the Caribbean, and you wanting to give back to the Caribbean through what you do best.
Correct. Well, I look back at my life, I saw all these people who helped me along the way, you know, and I feel that I have a big debt to the Caribbean. And if I could help one youngster achieve more than I have achieved by helping that youngster in the way that others have helped me, I would feel that my life was actually worthwhile. So in my old age, I'm willing to sacrifice and give back to help youngsters there achieve. But the greater good also is help the region economically, because I see, by and large, especially the countries that rely on tourism for foreign exchange, are in debt. And I was fortunate enough to have started two companies here in the U.S. And so I know a little bit about entrepreneurship. I know a little bit about starting up companies and how they work and how to create products and how to get them marketed. And these are skills I picked up along the way. And I figure that if I can help also by helping to increase the awareness of youngsters about entrepreneurship and getting them interested, perhaps one of them will go up there and start the next Google somewhere in the Caribbean, because one Google could supply all the able-bodied people in St. Lucia with jobs. Yeah. And I see that as being very possible. So my pet projects right now, which I'm doing through the Caribbean Science Foundation, my pet projects are to help inspire youngsters and empower them to think outside the box, to think big, and to go off and perhaps form the next quote-unquote Google.
Yeah.
It may not be an ICT, it might be another field, but that's okay. Because it is possible. I really truly believe
I believe that too. And that's why I started in Impractopia. So if we can get Caribbean people talking to each other about each other, whether you live in the region or not, and you want to, and there are avenues that you can help contribute to the development of the region, it's totally possible. Because I believe our people are capable. We have the talent. We have the energy. A lot of us just need that access to be able to engage what our hidden talents are and what we can do to contribute and, you know, make, yeah, like you said, the next Google or something else that really does lift the entire region.
Agree. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said access, because for a lot of us, that's what it is. I was able to have access because of the people who intervened in my life and encouraged me to come to the United States. I had access to the best laboratories. I had access to movers and shakers. I rubbed shoulders with other students and professionals who were doing things. And it becomes infectious and contagious that if you're in an environment where people are starting companies, you probably will start one too. And that's what happened at MIT. A lot of my fellow professors either started companies, owned companies, worked for companies. And so I became curious as to how do they do this? Had I stayed in Barbados, that curiosity probably would not have peaked. But, you know, I did not go back to the region to start a company there. And the kind of work that I was doing at the time, it wasn't feasible to do that. But I think for some of the youngsters now, if they can indeed either stay in the region and have the access, or leave the region to get the access, get the experience, and then bring some of it back, I think it would be great. And if they can't come back like I did, they should help from afar.
Yes.
Because I think there's a lot of ways that we can make a contribution. And not all of us might come back or be able to come back, depending on the disciplines.
Penny, I want us to start off with you giving us a brief history of how the Foundation for the Development of Caribbean Children came to be.
FDCC was actually launched towards the end of 2011 into 2012. The work that is currently being done by FDCC was done under the Caribbean Child Support Initiative, so CCSI, which was a program, so with a specific time period, and it had external funding. CCSI was funded by the Bernard Van Leer Foundation. When BVLF, Bernard Van Leer, when they decided that their work in the Caribbean, that they would place their resources in other parts of the world, and that they would be withdrawing from the Caribbean. So the thinking was that the work that had been done so far couldn't just end, and that's where FDCC was born. So the program, Caribbean Child Support Initiative, was ending, but the work needed to continue. So a foundation was launched, and that was the birth of FDCC into 2012. And that's really how we came out. When CCSI was in existence, they oversaw the Roving Caregivers Program, which is our flagship program. And with them leaving, we didn't want that program to end. And just as a bit of insight for listeners or viewers who might not know, the Roving Caregivers Program, I might refer to it as RCP as we go on, is a program that caters to children between 0 to 5 whose families cannot afford to enroll them into preschool or kindergartens or any developmental program, you know, would stimulate them and cater to their needs as they are growing. And so what the program does is to provide a caregiver who will visit the home at least once a week for an hour or two and will do stimulation exercises with the children at home. And the thinking behind that and the research behind this program supports the notion that children who are stimulated within these ages have better chances of being more productive citizens, thriving more when they get into primary school. Actually, research shows that in the Caribbean, many parents don't sing to or interact with their children. One out of every 3 children entering primary school are entering without the skills needed to function. So to put a very practical spin on that, what we're saying then is if you have 3 children, one of them is going into primary school behind the rest of the class, and catching up is often very difficult. So these other children would have had the opportunity to be in preschool, you know, at this point, know how to hold a pencil, know how to color within the lines, know how to write their names. And this child who perhaps has been at home and not stimulated, because we're not saying children can't stay at home. We're saying if they are, they still need the stimulation, you know, that other children get in other ways. And so they start school, because in the Caribbean, primary school is generally free, and our governments have been very kind to provide that for us. But we place emphasis on what happens before then, because some children start behind and then find it difficult to catch up later on.
Okay, and that's one of the things that the Roving Caregivers program does, to instill that early formal stimulation with the kids and helps educate parents in the importance of that?
Yes, that's the other thing that I forgot to mention, but thank you for that. So the caregivers go to the homes and they work, yes, primarily with the children, but there's also a parenting aspect. We also encourage the parents to get involved, because if they're only there 1 or 2 hours per week, then practically speaking, that doesn't compare to the child who's in preschool, you know, all day for 5 days. So we have to encourage the parents to continue the work that the caregiver is doing when they're in, so that when they're not there, they're still involved. And one of the things that we do that I'm very proud of is, because we go to low-income families, we are not using resources that they don't have available to them. We take, you know, soda bottles, clean them out, put seeds in them. We live in the Caribbean, you know, so we don't want them to think, well, you know, the caregiver has come with all these books, they don't have resources to go and get them, or they've come with toys and they don't have those resources. Take seeds, place them in a bottle, tape the bottle, put gift wrap paper on the outside of it and tape it again so that when the child is playing with it, the paper isn't coming off. And you would be amazed how intrigued the children are from those types of toys. So it doesn't have to be anything special. It doesn't take a lot of resources. And that's one of the things that we're very proud of, that we promote homemade toys and homemade resources. We promote, you know, parent-child interaction.
Maybe we can say that it doesn't matter. You don't have to be in the Caribbean to help the FBCC.
No, you don't. Because one of the things that we're trying to do now is to really reach out to the diaspora. Certainly, you know, anybody living in North America or the UK, be welcome to be supporters, to be donors. But we're really trying to form relationships with people who are of West Indian heritage, you know. I lived overseas for a while, and I know that you suddenly become, you don't really think that you're very patriotic while you live in the Caribbean, but when you leave, you know, there's something about your heart that feels closer to home. You want to do more, you want to know more. And so we really invite Caribbean nationals, persons with Caribbean heritage living in the diaspora, to get involved. And involved doesn't always mean money. You know, we welcome your time, we welcome your skills, you know, in helping us ultimately to help children. That's really what we're about.
Okay. I want to just let our viewers and listeners hear how some of the parents are reacting to what the program is doing for them as a family unit, what it's doing for their kids, and maybe even their communities.
It's really touching. To be very honest with you, the most fulfillment I feel is when I'm the grown and, you know, going household to household and seeing what the work that I do in the office, what that results in a very practical way for these children and for their parents. And I think it was last Christmas we were in Dominica and we went to a family and they truthfully didn't say very much. The mother appeared to have a disability. The child was still very much a baby and the father was there. He didn't say very much, but they were so welcoming. It was just, you know, and we had camera crew with us and a photographer. There were some staff members, some crew members from LIAC. So there were quite a few of us, but they welcomed us with open arms. And I was really impacted because I recognized that the child's mother being disabled meant that she could offer no stimulation to the child. She was mentally disabled. And physically, there was also something wrong. And so that left a lot on the father, who obviously is also now the breadwinner for the household and can't be there all the time. And so situations like that really encourage me that the work that FDCC is doing is worthwhile and that we are meeting the families who most need the help. Because I think sometimes that's a concern for some people, you know, what are you doing with the money? Is it really, you know, going to the children? It really is. And we really are, you know, seeing a difference. If you are interested in hearing, you know, parent testimonials for yourself, if you visit our YouTube page, we have some videos there with parents talking about their experiences. We have videos with teachers, primary school teachers, who compare children who have gone through RCP, who enter their classrooms with children who've been at home and the difference that she sees in them. So we're not just talking, you know, we're out there getting the work done and we're seeing the results.
You're walking the walk, Penny. I as a donor, as somebody who's listening to that, I feel really good.
I really hope you enjoyed that. It brought me back to sitting at my computer and just listening to these guests, what they had to say about the Caribbean. It reinforces what I believe as well, that our people have a lot to offer. And we can only do that when we see and we can encourage each other and learn from one another. Now, I'm so happy to bring you a preview. Just a few words from next week's guest, who is the first on our Woman Messenger series. Barbara Blake Hanna, author, journalist, filmmaker, public speaker, Rastafarian, managing director of Jamaica Media Productions.
We survived slavery, and we survived slavery in a very positive way. We survived, you know, I mean, there's been slavery through history, but we survived one of the worst kinds of enslavement, and enslavement that was physically brutal and culturally assaulting. It replaced everything we knew with something totally alien and told us that that was better. And yet, we as a group of islands, as a people, we produced happy music. We produced color, life, liveliness, happiness. Isn't that strange? We didn't produce sorrow and gloom and doom. We produced beauty, our art, our literature, our poetry, and especially our music. You know, it's so surprising.
Well, that's our show for this week. Be sure to come back for our exciting series, Woman Messenger. My name is Kimja. I'll be right here next time in Practopia.